Hey everybody, just before we get started with the show, wanted to set a reminder that patreon.com/thepenskyfile is the best way to support the show. A couple dollars a month, you get extra podcasts, you get the behind the scenes stuff, you get all that good stuff. And if you are a Captain Tier supporter, you get a shout out. So I want to say a very huge thanks to Stephen Cobb, David Grant Taylor, Dwayne Hackett, Eric Johnson, Jay Stanley, David Kay, Nick Sergey, Nathan Elliott, Michael Pond, Matthew Cutler, Will Yates, Matt Flores, Samuel Custer, Santos Gonzalez, Robert Cummins, Andrew Cherlog, Spinobi, Russ Graham, Decker Sebastiani, Bradley Killens, Mike Burnett, Matthew Ross, Ben Douglas, Kyle Barrett, Joint Mango, and Tark Latif. Thanks very much, guys. You make the show possible. You are the reason that we end up doing Discovery. So now, without further ado, let's get into an obol for Karan.
Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the show. We're continuing our coverage of Star Trek Discovery. This is an episode called An Obol for Karan. It is the fourth episode of the second season, aired on February 7th, 2019. Teleplay goes to Alan McElroy and Andrew Colville. Story credit goes to Jordan Ardino, Gretchen Berg, and Aaron Harberts, directed by Lee Rose. In this episode, a mysterious sphere threatens the USS Discovery, even as May, in her original form, implements a plan that puts Tilly's life in danger. Saru and Burnham's bond grows when Saru is forced to acknowledge a deeply unsettling Kelpian truth, and Pike receives new intel on Spock from a loyal friend. We're joined by Clay, as always. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I was going to try and do my intro in another language, but then I realized that I don't know any other languages, and my understanding of Spanish is limited to like two semesters in ninth grade. So.
Well, people like it when you do the Klingon impression, so why don't you just make up some Klingon for them?
No, you know, it's funny, not to go on a complete tangent. I don't know if you watch Bob's Burgers, but there's a great joke they do in Bob's Burgers where the kids are trying to write this love song for this other character, and they're like, oh, love songs are always better in a different language. And Tina, the older sibling, is taking Spanish. And so they sing this song where all she's saying is like the most basic of Spanish, where she's like, como esta, me llamo Tina. But then her sister is like translating it as, your love whispers over the hills and fills me with joy. It's pretty great.
I always thought that, wouldn't Spanish be a very easy language to write songs in, because everything ends in an OS or an AS, you know, like so many words end in the same sound that I feel like it would be an easier language to write a song in. Does that make sense?
You're taking the Spanish language music industry to task right off the bat.
Dr. Dre with an accent over the E and everything like that. Well, let's get into an obol for Karan, which I believe is how you pronounce that. An obol is a Greek coin or something like that. Karan was the guy who rode the boat on the River of Styx, and he moved the souls back and forth between the living and the dead.
It is a gloriously pretentious title.
It is. It is for what happens. But we're going to get into it. Let's take a break. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back and break down an obol for Karan.
What's wrong? The doors won't open, and that thing reattached itself to Tilly.
Can you detach it?
I could cut it off. She wouldn't even lose a freckle.
Bad idea. If it's a symbiote, removing it might kill her.
Well, thanks for stopping by.
I came to see if we could find a way to boost power to shield.
No, with the systems fluctuating, this section is partitioned off. We can't get to the warp core.
All right, so let's get into this, Clay. I had three things that we can talk about. I'm going to try to, because I feel like sort of the show being so serialized that we can kind of run into a rut of we talk about the same things every time here. So I'm going to start this one off a little bit differently. I have three things I wrote down that I would want to talk about in this episode. So why don't you tell me which one we should start on?
Before you get into that, I'm going to tell you the one that I want to start on. Let's rip out the hologram communicators so we'll only use view screen on the Enterprise. Why do they keep making so much extra work for themselves? This is a stupid detail that you don't need if you just set the thing in the fucking future.
So this is going to be the solving tech thing that I wanted to talk about. So we'll go into that. So we'll do that one first. I have solving tech / the Tilly storyline. There's the Saru storyline, and then there's the blob that they run into. Those are the three things that I figure we can talk about. So we'll start with solving tech. That's a very good point. Although, So there's a couple things. There's that is the throwaway line that they put into this is the reason why hologram technology seems to go away is because my understanding is that Pike doesn't like it and therefore everyone else stops using it at some point.
Yeah, so nobody in the rest of for the next 200 years uses it.
Someone on Discord, I think, brought up the chance that they're going to, or on Twitter, I think, is like they're going to have to expose something about it to further kick that, like if the Klingons can like hack into it or something, you know, like it's an unsafe way to communicate.
Just, I don't know. It just seems like there it's so much extra work to try and write around this stuff.
It is. And it's, you know, it's also, it ties into the spore drive in some way where the view screen thing, I actually don't know a better way to get around it than what they did. The problem with it is that it's so stupid of a setup and like they've made this a problem when it didn't really need to be a problem.
Yeah.
And I feel that the spore drive is also going that route where this spore drive thing where we're finding that the spore drive, we kind of predicted this, I think. The spore drive is causing damage to the mycelial network and the spore creatures don't really want this to be happening. There's a problem now and other Trek sites that sort of write about this are starting to sort of retcon it into making sense where there's episodes of Voyager, right? Where Voyager is a very long way from home and they're trying to get back. And there are frequently episodes where they have an opportunity to make a big jump, but at a cost to something. And so they always have to take the Starfleet side and say, well, we can't do this because the damage it would cause is not worth us getting a little bit closer to home at this point. Mm. And so they're like, oh, this understanding of the spore drive is going to fix... it works with Voyager because Voyager, they don't even bring this up as a possibility because they know that doing the damage that they're going to do is not worth it. I don't really agree with this. Like the spore drive should have just been written out of season one with a time travel fix that it never got invented because the longer they go with the spore drive, the harder it is to make any sense of it. And I think that a lot of the tech suffers from the same thing.
Well, the spore, I think that they're retroactively putting the spore drive as a possibility to use in Voyager, but now they're saying that they didn't use it in Voyager because of what's happening here?
Yeah, so because the damage that it's causing is so catastrophic, Voyager doesn't even bring it up as an option.
Well,
this is just a Trek review site. This is not
I know, but like I think they're just speaking of doing too much work, I think they're just thinking too far ahead. I think if anything, they're just laying the seeds for why they stop using the spore drive at all. So it's like, it's not like it in Voyager, it is a possible option. They just choose not to use it. I just think they just, at that point, it's not a thing anymore.
Sure, but that would mean that the mycelial network has to be destroyed by the end of Discovery. You know what I mean?
Well, either they don't have to destroy it. They can just choose to stop using the drive and destroy the technology.
Right, but I don't believe that. Like, I don't believe that Voyager being so far away would not be tempted to use the spore drive. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like unless you do irreparable damage to the mycelial network that it's no longer even worth talking about.
Well, but my point is, like, why would Voyager have a spore drive on it?
Sure. But I feel they would talk about it. Like, it's such a solution to Voyager's problem. You know what I mean? Like, the whole setup of Voyager is, like, we need to go a long distance. And if this remarkable technology... This would be like us having flying cars 100 years ago, and we've chosen never to use it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if enough people die, then you stop using flying cars. All of this work is silly. Because, I mean, there's a certain the reason that the view screen thing bothers me so much is because they are actively making a stand by doing that, saying we're going to try and force as different as the stuff is in this, we're going to try and force our way into continuity. Whereas originally I didn't mind that stuff because they were just like, nah, this is just how it is. Like, so yeah, they didn't use hologram technology in the original show. They just have it now. Like, there's some of these things that don't matter, right?
Sure.
Like, it doesn't matter if they talk in holograms or not. Like, who cares? It's a
stylistic choice that doesn't really impact.
Yeah, exactly. Anything. Like, for instance, one of the things that always bothered me, and for different reasons, was the technology jump in the Star Wars prequels. Because the technology in the original Star Wars movies are so down and dirty and so gross. And in the prequels, it becomes the opposite of that, where everything's really shiny and new and like sleek and everything. And at first I thought, oh, okay, well, that's kind of interesting, because they're going to show you how when the Empire came around, everything just sort of fell apart, and then you get this sort of Dark Ages that we were in the original trilogy. But they never did that. It was just an excuse to do the most modern designed stuff they could possibly do. There was no story element to it.
Right.
I kind of feel like the problem here is that they're doing the same thing, but they're actually trying to force it into this where having a technological progression in the Star Wars movies would have made story sense and had been interesting. I don't really think it matters here, because that's not the story they're telling, you know.
Right.
It's not a story about changing time and how the Starfleet changes into the Starfleet. At least I don't think that's what they're doing. So it's weird for them to try and ham fist this in.
I'd agree with you.
There's so many other things that they haven't done it to.
I'd agree with you about the view screens. I think the spore drive is fundamentally a bigger issue. Like, the view screen thing
I agree. As far as spore drive goes, they are going to have to address it before the show is over.
Yeah. And the view screen thing is more like I like how Kurtzman was giving interviews of like, just wait, this season we're going to fix all the problems. And it's like a one-line throwaway that he's like, fixed. You know, he's like, yeah. He's got a big rubber stamp and he's just like, solved. It's like you say, they brought up all these issues and they're really sort of avoidable. And it's just such a, for in terms of writing, it's just such a limiting thing to be a writer on this show and be like, oh, mm-hmm. Jesus, like I have to explain why we chose to use a hologram in the first episode. It's like, what a waste of time. We can't even focus on the actual story. So I think that we covered that. We could move the solving tech into the Tilly storyline if you want to go on that now, or if you want to move on to something else. I think that I guess my takeaway from this episode was that I thought that this was one of the most original episodes the show had ever done, but it was also an extremely bad episode at the same time. So there were parts of it that I really liked, and then there were storylines and plot lines in it that I thought were absolutely terrible, even though I liked some of the conceptual stuff that they were doing.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you want to go off of that or if you want to go into the Saru and the Blob thing, but you choose what you want to talk about.
Well, just as an overall point, I actually... I'd be interested to hear what you hated so much, because I actually liked this episode quite a bit.
Okay.
I thought it was the most original that they've done. I'm sick of asteroid based problems, because this is like the third one they've had in five episodes.
Well, this is a soft asteroid. It's like a blob, I guess.
it's a living asteroid or something.
Yep.
I felt like that plot line felt like a classic Star Trek plot line. Some of the mechanics were a little clunky in places, like the scene where everybody's talking in different languages. I didn't go back and watch it. I was going to, but I forgot to. But I'm pretty sure when they start talking in different languages, they're still talking to each other. Like the subtitles you're getting are like...
They can understand each other?
Yeah, they can understand each other, which is kind of weird. So it's like, what's the point if the only people who can't understand you are the people who are watching the show? I don't know. I could be wrong.
That's a very good point, although I think that they're not supposed to be able to understand each other. So they're just coincidentally saying things that make sense in context with each other.
Yeah. I don't know. That's whatever. The Tilly thing... I don't know. I don't know about the Tilly thing. It feels to me...
Feels like Stranger Things to me.
Yeah, a little bit. I guess you're right. It is kind of like Stranger Things. It's weird because they've started doing these like three-plot episodes instead of two-plot episodes. Although, I don't know. Would you call the asteroid thing and the Saru thing the same plot line?
Yes.
Okay. I guess it's technically two. But this like... The problem with the Tilly thing is I don't think that they're giving you enough to keep it interesting. It's sort of just the mystery of the plot is, well, what does this thing want? And that in and of itself is not interesting to me, because it's not really doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a bunch of people standing around going, I wonder what this thing wants. I would say the biggest failing of this episode, and it's the biggest, well, for me anyway, And I think the biggest failing of a lot of these episodes is, holy shit, there was a lot of techno babble in this episode.
Yeah, there was. That was one of my notes, yeah.
Oh my God, it was so much standing around and just saying science stuff that doesn't make any sense. And we've talked about this before, where it's like the techno babble works because it's supporting your story. It's not becoming the story.
Yep. I feel Discovery and teeters towards it is the story for a good section of a lot of scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Because like you get into sections like the stuff in the engine room with when they're trying to figure out how to get rid of this electric pulse or whatever. And then they just go back and forth talking about shooting it at the door. And then, well, if this happens, then this happens. And then we have to do this thing and this thing. And you find yourself going like, what the hell are they going to do? And what are the stakes here? Like, what's it, right. what is it risk? You know, I don't know.
No, I 100% agree. I think that what's funny about the technobabble in Discovery compared to other Star Trek shows is that it does feel like it is the point of a lot of things. And because of the pace of the show, it like gives me a headache when they talk about it. It's like, Jesus, like, am I supposed to pay? Eventually, I just shut my brain off and I wait until the solution comes about.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't matter what they're talking about. And all I can really think about is it seems like an incredible amount of work for the actors to have to remember this stuff, and it doesn't really end up mattering at all. It's just, I was thinking about Tig Notaro having to be like, what are my lines? Like, how am I supposed to say this?
Yeah.
And it just, it comes across as extremely forced. I would say I think we mentioned this before, I would describe Discovery's technobabble as, it sounds more realistic than previous Trek shows, which always kind of use the same six terms over and over to describe everything.
Oscillator,
or invert the warp field, or whatever the hell they're talking about. And Discovery's just feels really intense. You kind of shut down after listening to it, and it just resolves everything very, very easily, which is a Discovery trait.
On the flip side, though, there was the classic Trek version of that, when they're trying to pull away from the thing, and Captain Pike is like, if this doesn't work, eject the warp core and try and don't make us die.
That's stuff I know. It's like, eject the warp core.
That I can relate to, because the warp core is going to explode, and I know the stakes there. When you're just standing there and, you know, with this intense music going on while you're just throwing words back and forth, it's a little harder to follow and care about.
Yes, I'd agree with that. I think the technobabble is kind of a problem of the show. It's a little bit too extreme, and I think that the pacing of the shows kind of just escalates how you feel about the technobabble, because it's a lot of solutions that come out anywhere. Because I think for the stuff that I really liked about the episode, like, I liked the central concept of this ball organism thing that is, it's probably the most original use of the universal translator that I've seen Star Trek episode. And it really highlights the fact that none of them speak the same language on the ship. It's just because of the universal translator that they can understand each other. And I think that the thing that goes wrong there is when it happened, it was like, oh, what a great little concept for the episode. Like, I'm sure they'll have to last this entire episode not understanding each other. Saru solves it in 2 seconds. He just types stuff into the computer and fixes the problem. And that's such a Discovery hang up of something that they like to do. It's like, you had something there that you could have really built off of. And instead of making a difficulty where the crew has to learn how to communicate outside of this universal translator thing, you just have Saru solve the problem. And it really lets it down.
And they really could have jacked up the amount that they are depending on Saru if he hadn't solved it right away, if he was like the only one who could do this stuff.
Yeah, because he speaks 94 languages. He can talk to everybody.
Yeah, except for moisture evaporators. But yeah, if he was the go-between and he's also dying and stuff, and that would, I think, tie those things together a lot nicer. I don't think it would have to go the whole episode, because that would be a little bit much. But I think, extending that out, I think, would have been really fun.
Yeah, it's just an interesting, you know, computer virus from this thing infects the systems, blah, 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 all that stuff. I think my big problem with that thing is that the blob has no personality to it. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's not a giant hand.
Well, they try to convey the fact that it's organic. So it seems like it's alive, but it doesn't, like they don't really communicate with it or anything. It's just, it's desperate to upload its information into Discovery before it blows up. And it felt just a little disconnected. It felt like the episode realized that it's nice to have one of these big Star Trek event things where you run into this weird organism and you have to misunderstand it. And then you become to an understanding of what it actually means and what it wants. It just felt like it wasn't, I would have preferred that to be the focus of the thing instead of, and you can take it from here, instead of devolving into what I think is the worst aspect of it, which is the Saru storyline that they put into here, because I hate this Saru storyline. I think it's awful on virtually every single level. You said you kind of liked the episode, so do you want to defend it, or do you think it's not as bad as I seem to think it is?
I like the ending of it. I don't think it, I don't know. I think for what they did with him at the end there, I wish they had done it in a way that was more relevant to his people.
Well, I'll just interject with what I think about the ending. How about you write a story where a character learns something instead of getting a disease, which causes him to fix his character flaw? You know what I mean? Like, why don't they have the episode revolve around him learn? Like, it's such a cheat for how you want to develop Saru. If you want to get him past his fear of things, they just gave him a disease which cured him of it, as opposed to him learning anything or going through any sort of development as a character. Well, it's just a weird episode
idea. Yeah, I think what I would have done with this is, because I like the ultimate point that they get to, but I wish it had been in a story where so he gets this disease or whatever, and then they have to, and it's, you know, it's like, I need to go back to my home planet because I need to do X, Y, and Z. But I can't go down there because of the Prime Directive, blah, 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 that kind of shit. And it, so there's the actual involvement of this ceremony and this, like, culling that he talks about, that it, that is a result of this disease that everybody gets, where it's like, oh, once you get the disease, then it's your time to go to the thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So at that point, then when he realizes at the end, like, the, for whatever reason, the Prime Directive stops him from going back home. And so he's all depressed about that. But then at the end, when he realizes that it's all just a smokescreen to get people to sacrifice themselves, now you have a direct connection to the planet instead of him just telling you about the story. And there's more character weight there, because now he's directly involved. He can directly be involved with the fact that, shit, this stuff that's happening on my planet that's been happening for years that I, you know, took us off course so they could bring me back to my home planet to do, is all a lie. So, like, the story would have to be about that more than it would have to be just like a subplot. So as a subplot, yeah, it's kind of tacky.
But I feel they're going there with the Kelpian thing. Like, they're going,
I think, yeah, they'll probably get there eventually.
Yeah, that's the next step in it, is what I would expect. Like, I know that we see Saru's homeworld this season, so he must go back and talk about that.
I think the problem, a big problem with it for me, though, is, like, they're basing you understanding what's happening on whether or not you saw that short.
Do you think you had to see that short to understand? I think it would have felt like Discovery's typical writing of, we're just going to give you a lot of exposition.
Yeah, here. No, I agree. Yeah, if you haven't seen the short, it just sounds like they are making something up and then explaining it to you as their story progression, instead of actually writing a satisfying story. Which I don't think makes it any better. I think it's equally as lazy to do that short and then be like, well, if we just, you know, we can just talk about the stuff people saw in the short and then we don't have to do anything creative with it.
Yeah.
But that being said, I do like the ending. I do like what they do to him. But yeah, I mean, if you couldn't have him do, this is another option. If you couldn't have him actually go back and interact with his planet, I wish they had done something that was a little bit more thematically tied together with what was happening in the story where, like, you know, I don't know, maybe they kind of did. Because I guess it would have to be like, he, you know, he's this character that's his main thing is he's constantly living in fear. So you would hope that, like, this last moments of his life before he is granted this deus ex machina thing of no longer being in fear his entire life, he would have to do something that would go directly in the face of his the fact that he's fearful all the time.
Right. He would have to do some kind of brave sacrifice.
Yeah. So if they gave him this disease and then made the story about him, I guess they kind of are, because I guess he's still working in the face of imminent death, but I guess he's doing it more as sort of like a to get his mind off of it than he is actually like sacrificing himself.
Yeah, you know, I think it's,
I don't know. It's tough.
I think it's inconsistent writing for the Saru race, because Saru is not always afraid of things. Like he right. seems like a Starfleet character in every other sense. Like he'll occasionally bring up the fact that he's afraid, or like his species is supposed to be afraid, mm-hmm. but he is. We talked about it during the short. He is the bravest Kelpian that's ever existed. So his fear is sort of relative to everyone else, and it doesn't really come across as that fearful of things.
So let's think about it this way then. Like, do you think this would be the same thing as if in the original series, is it when Spock has the Ponfar thing? Mm-hmm. Is that when they go to Vulcan and they have the sword fight or
yep.
whatever?
Yep.
If instead of going to Vulcan, it all just played out on the ship,
like Spock emerges from the bathroom and is like, "I'm okay, everything's fine."
Yeah, like I guess that would be the parallel, right?
Yeah, it would kind of be the in a way.
I think
it's almost
they did something similar with Worf.
In a way, it's almost the motion picture Spock thing. But in the motion picture, he at least flies into V'ger and has his epiphany.
Right.
It would be the motion picture Spock if he just had that epiphany while he was on the Enterprise. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I just find it, I find it unsatisfying. I think it's a cheat of Saru. I think that it continues the trend of Discovery's emotionally manipulating storylines that they like to yeah. do. Because Star Trek will do these things where you think a character is dying. You know he's not going to die. I will say one thing to Discovery's credit. I was not sure that Saru would live through the episode.
Yeah, me neither.
I thought he may die and be written out of the show. And it works because A, Discovery has shown that it will kill characters off, and B, doing that would have been such bad writing that it would have made sense for the show to do.
Yeah.
Like, just to kill him off in this random episode.
Yeah, I was thinking that too, that they would do it as this, you know, no one's going to see this coming, big emotional moment. In my head, I was like, you're getting rid of your best character, man.
Yes, and also on Twitter, the actors who I follow were saying, tune in for Doug Jones's performance tonight. So I was treating that as a, oh, Jesus, like maybe they actually are getting rid of him. But no, they don't.
I had also just seen a cast listing for another show that was coming up, and his name was in the cast. So I was like, oh, maybe he's leaving Star Trek. You know, so I wasn't totally sure.
Hmm. Yeah, that's the one positive. The downside of it is it's just more it's the beheading the baby from last episode.
Yeah.
Burnham and Saru do not have a relationship as far as I'm concerned like this. They don't care about each other to the way that the show wants me to think that they do care about each other.
Yeah. I think as we're talking about this, I think this episode got me a little bit. Because I think I was so distracted by how novel the main story was.
I'd agree with that. I liked how novel. I liked the blob. I liked that blob idea.
Yeah. That some of the other stuff that was the same old, didn't really stand out as much as it had. Because I was thinking about like that scene with Saru and Burnham, where they have this big heart-to-heart. I was like, this scene's pretty good, but I don't feel like any of this stuff is actually true. Like their relationship is not what Burnham is kind of saying that it is. Like, it's like, oh, you're my family. You've always been nice to me. But their relationship has always been slightly contentious.
Yeah. Antagonistic towards each other for much of season one.
And it feels like, in retrospect, one of those things that I've talked about a million times, I think, in modern TV shows where they write scenes that they think are supposed to be there, regardless of whether or not they make sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think The Walking Dead, one of the reasons why I'd stopped watching The Walking Dead, because they did that shit all the time. Like, it was, the most egregious one for me was when, it's somewhere in the second season, this one character ended up getting bitten by a zombie that was directly because of something that Carl the kid did. And then you have these, you have two scenes later where older adults take him aside and say, listen, man, this isn't your fault. You can't blame yourself for this. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's directly his fault.
Right.
Yeah. But you're writing this scene where the father figure tells the son that he didn't do anything wrong, because that's the kind of emotional scene you think is supposed to be there at this point.
Sure.
It doesn't have anything to do with what actually happened. You're just going on like, well, here's where we usually put the emotional thing with the dad, and we can't have the dad just like yell at the kid for getting this guy killed.
Yeah.
And nobody else does it either. Like, it would be one thing. Oh, no, this is turned to the Walking Dead podcast, but it would be one thing if one character was like, hey, man, don't blame yourself. Shit happens. But then someone else was like, no, it's your fucking fault, man. It's right. Your fault.
Yep.
But, you know, so when you get into these shows,
at least the
where
show is aware of the characters
exactly.
being inconsistent. Yeah.
Yeah. So when you get into these shows where they've got these dramatic beats, but they're just doing these stock scenes where you've got these two characters who have been there since the first episode. And well, obviously, if they've been together this long, they must have some sort of like great relationship. Could you imagine if they did a scene like this in the fifth season of Deep Space Nine? Imagine
they did
if
it,
on
they
fucking,
did it on TNG. They did Ethics, which was the episode where Worf breaks his back and asks Riker to kill him. That's this.
Oh.
That's what they're playing off of here, I think, and except it works in TNG and it doesn't work here.
Well, I was just thinking, like, could you imagine if in The Ascent they had a scene with, like, the end of The Ascent is fucking Odo and Quark just, like, blowing each other over how much they love each other. You know, it's like, that right. stuff, that's not going to, you know.
Yeah.
That's what you want. You know, it comes back to what I've talked about previously. I think I talked about it in that episode, where there's a certain want that a lot of people have of the characters they like. They want them to like each other, mm-hmm. and they want them to just be on good terms. So if you really like the character of Saru and you really like the character of Burnham, you're going to want these two characters to have this emotional scene where they talk about how much they love each other.
Yeah.
But do you really want that? No. You want them to be honest to who they are, and you want Burnham to be like, fuck you, man. I'm not going to kill you.
Yep.
You know, it stops. You live your whole life in fear, guy.
Or to
if this
take
is
her
your
Vulcan,
thing, stop living in fear.
Her Vulcan approach to this might be a useful time to write her character into.
Yeah.
You know, like to have a. It's another episode where Burnham cries again about everything.
Yes.
It's getting to be a little bit of an old hat, I think.
Yeah, like if you wanted to have that first scene with the two of them, where she plays it much more Vulcan, and then have her break down at the end. That's different, you
yes.
know? That yep. way she's at least like trying to compartmentalize everything. And then at the end, when she's tasked with actually killing him, she can't handle it. And it comes out then. And then, you know, they have some sort of emotional thing then. But yeah, just to have it be like, let's talk about, I mean, Saru is great. But
absolutely.
We don't have to have everybody talk about how great he is. That's our job.
I didn't like it. I thought it's bad. It's bad writing, in my opinion. Like, it's just such a manipulative, these aren't really the characters that they're going through.
Yeah.
And I think that the what I liked about it was linking the blob to his thing in some way.
Yeah.
Like, they made that connection, and that made a lot of sense. And the other thing that I think I liked about this episode, as opposed to the last episode, is that this one does feel like another episodic adventure on the way to finding Spock.
Yes.
And I will say that I don't know how much longer they can string us along with the Spock thing. It kind of feels like they need to find him sooner rather than later. But I did like this. If the season is just going to be this string of stories where they come into adventures while they're trying to find Spock, I don't mind it. I think that's a good blend
yeah.
of Star Trek and the serialized story that they've got.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the strongest episodes have been when they've done that, which have been this one and the first two.
Yes. Yep.
And when they get into the murkiness of the other stuff is where it falls apart.
I thought that this episode was a blend of the first two episodes and the third one, in that it took
yeah.
the best parts of the first two and then it mixed it with the worst parts of the third one. And it came out with this.
Yeah, I can see that definitely. Shit, I had something else I was going to say. Moving on.
Yeah, I mean,
it'll come back to me.
The only other thing that's really left is the Tilly storyline. If you want to go into the Tilly storyline, what do you think of Jet Reno as a character?
I like her, if only because she's just different for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
My girlfriend is a big Tig Notaro fan, and she had a she had an interesting time reconciling the fact that Tig Notaro was on a Star Trek show. And I was like, yeah, I mean, you know, she's just playing herself basically, but she's a fun character. It seems like they relegate all the quirky people to the engine room.
Yes. She's kind of the Barclay for the 21st century, I suppose, for like our generation of Barclay, as opposed to watching with the TNG thing.
Yeah. I think I would rather see her than Stamets at this point.
Yeah.
I think Stamets is pretty boring.
Stamets's eyebrow game was on point yet again in this episode.
Was this a Frakes directed episode?
Next, I don't think it is. No, it's directed by Lee Rose, something like that.
Oh yeah.
Stamets is useless at this point.
They don't know what they're doing with him.
No, he has nothing to do, and so the only thing they can do is they can bring in Tig Notaro to sort of banter with him and. Mm-hmm. I'm torn about Jet Reno. Love the name, love the performance, the writing. I'm not really sure as a character if she has much of a point to things besides inserting conflict into scenes that sometimes desperately need character conflict. Like the thing that she's in is that Stamets and Tilly are trying to fix whatever is wrong with Tilly. And she is just there to add sort of a cynical, sarcastic counterpoint to Stamets. It's not really, she fixes things, but they did that really horrible choice where they're like, they did the Jeffrey Dahmer thing where they're like, we're going to power drill into your skull and pour some sulfuric acid into it.
That scene was hilarious. That scene was hilarious. When they start singing fucking Space Oddity as he's slowly bringing a drill up to her head, it reminded me of fucking American Psycho.
Yeah. That was bizarre, sort of. Like, I thought, because they play it off as sort of a joke where Tig Notaro is like, I got this drill. And then she's like, no, seriously, do you have like a laser scalpel? And they end up with just using the drill.
So my problem with this storyline is, Jet Reno's fine. She's fun. But, like, why is this not all Stamets' story? Because his whole thing is that he's linked to the Spore network, and he's got some, you know, hang-up about his dead husband.
It's weird he does not bring up Culber in this. Yeah. He should make the connection at this point that the Spore creatures are Culber, or at least that's what it seems to be.
Yeah, but, and, like, he... for what seems to believe that Culber in some fashion is in the Spore network, right? Like that's why he doesn't want to go there.
Yep.
So he now has a direct link that he can talk to. He like a Spore from this network has now come to life and he can talk directly to it. So I feel like he should have some sort of, you know, interest in this instead. And have the conflict here be, how does Stamets react to this? Is it something that he's really interested in sort of like a mad scientist way? Not like, you know, crazy, but like...
He is the scientist, right. Is he technically interested in it?
And is there a part of him thinking like, well, if I have this direct connection to the whatever, does that mean that I can maybe talk to them? Does that mean I can talk to Culber? Does that mean maybe I can pull Culber out? Or is it something he's trying to push away, or is it something he's actively trying to not be involved in? But now Tilly's life is at stake, so he has to put aside his personal things in order to figure out how to save her life. So I feel like bringing in Jet Reno, they're avoiding writing anything for Stamets because this feels like a Stamets specific story.
Yep.
And he's not doing anything.
Because they're not. It has to be Stamets because they're not doing anything with Tilly about it. Like they kind of tricked us into thinking this was going to be a Tilly storyline, but Tilly's just there to serve as the conduit for the connection to the Spore network. So it feels like Stamets should pick up the rod or the baton at this point and carry forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it makes character sense for the Spore story and the, coming to life or the animation of the Spore network to be his story and him having to deal with it because he's the only character who has a direct emotional connection to the Spore drive. I mean, like, I really don't like the May thing. It feels so artificial.
Yeah.
Part of me almost wishes that it had just been Culber.
Yes, I was thinking it would just be Culber in sort of weird ghostly premonitions that Stamets would see.
I'm saying you can do the same thing. Just have it be Culber that's appearing to Tilly and not May.
I was thinking kind of the same thing, except I wouldn't have Tilly involved at all. I would just have sort of Stamets seeing Culber randomly and then him making a connection. If you want to use Tilly.
I think doing that is a little bit too obvious, I guess.
Sure.
You know, but if it's Tilly, you can still do the same stuff they're doing now, except that there is a direct emotional connection to the person that she's seeing instead of just someone who, like, the other thing with this fucking May thing.
Well, one thing first, like, wouldn't Stamets have, I was thinking Stamets would have the connection because Stamets would have Tilly thinking she's going crazy doesn't make as much sense to me as Stamets seeing his dead lover and thinking he's going crazy. Like, that feels like that's more emotionally understandable to me than Tilly seeing someone she grew up with 30 years ago or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, the grief thing, I think, piles onto it.
True. I guess I'm thinking just, you know, seeing the ghost of the dead person that you know, your dead lover is, it just feels too cliche. It kind of feels like that Deep Space Nine episode where Odo killed the Bajorans, where they go back in time. where it's like, yeah, okay, you know, obviously. But if it's Tilly, like, she's going to freak out because she's seeing Dr. Culber. And then when she tells Stamets what she's seeing, she doesn't have to explain who this fucking person is.
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay.
She can just be. And then now Tilly is now the conduit by which he is talking to Culber or some manifestation of Culber. So, and the May thing, I really don't like it because it's really bordering on killing a kid with your head during soccer for me. Because it's
corner kick.
Because it's like Tilly is explaining about this character that we don't know anything about. We don't know their relationship. And when she gets into it, like, she's feeling so, like, broken up about this person. And it's like, in this episode, she talks about how when Tilly was new to school or whatever, this girl saw what was inside of her and reached out to be her friend and blah, 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 blah. But you knew each other for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then you left. And then, well, yeah.
That's a lifetime in Discovery's timeline, I think, Clay. That's like they grew old with each other and died.
Yeah. Like, why? I don't understand. Like, the emotional connection there is so weak and so tenuous. And it's just you're explaining so much of this stuff to make it feel emotional when it's like, you know, you've got these other characters who are also dead.
Well, it feels
a lot more connection to people who are on the show.
It feels like they did it just so that they could have the mystery of the first episode May appeared where she was amid other characters. You know, like where we weren't sure if she was a ghost or a spore creature. We just thought she was a person who happened to be in a crowd of people with everyone else.
True.
And Culber being there obviously draws attention to the fact that if no one can see him, he's not actually there.
I think you could work around it. I mean, it wouldn't be as obvious, but I mean, I think there are ways you could have shot it where you just don't show his face.
Yeah.
You know, and have, or whatever. But I know that's why. But I don't think they're thinking fourth dimensionally, to take a line from Back to the Future.
Yeah. I think what you're saying is better, and it certainly tightens things up because it involves characters that we know, which is always a plus over characters that we don't know and you just made up for the storyline.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about the last episode, I feel like that Tilly storyline instantly becomes more interesting because even though they don't solve the problem, instead of just being like the really blah first act of that story that they give you that doesn't really have a conflict and doesn't really have a resolution, it just sort of is like setting stuff up.
Yeah.
Now you have, oh shit, Tilly's seeing Dr. Culber. Dr. Culber seems to be kind of mad about stuff. And then it ends with Tilly telling Stamets what she's seeing.
Yes.
And telling Stamets that she's seeing Culber is a story point. It's not just a, you know, going down the line and then, you know, sucking, let's put it this way. Her seeing, the way that they play it in, as it is the interesting thing that they give you at the end of the episode is that they suck this spore thing out of her. And she's like, oh yeah, that thing landed on my shoulder and it must have infected me with spores. Okay, who gives a shit? That's become secondary to the fact that she's seeing Dr. Culber and Stamets knows about it.
Yep.
And then she sucks this thing out, and now you have this living spore thing that is manifesting Dr. Culber. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean?
Right. There's a little conflict in terms of what Stamets wants to do with it versus everybody else wants to do with it, kind of, too.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. You know, so it's just, it feels like they wrote that storyline without thinking about the following episode. So it's like, yeah, we'll do this like mystery thing and she's seeing stuff. And then, well, what happens next? Well, I don't know. We haven't got there yet. We don't need to worry about that.
Last thing before we call it a day, what'd you think of Mystique?
I feel like I'm doing a lot of talking.
No, then that's fine. What'd you think of, I complained about the earlier bits, although I think that, I don't know, you've kind of talked me into liking the episode more. I don't know if I've drawn your attention to the bad parts of the episode a little bit more.
I think we've evened each other out.
Yeah, so, but I think, what'd you think of Mystique as number one?
Oh, yeah. She was fine. I thought she was good.
Short scene. Doesn't really have much to do except drop off a file for Pike. Yeah.
I wonder if she's... Do you know if she's coming back at all?
I have to assume. They mentioned her name so many times, I can't believe it's just a cameo type thing like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought she was good. I thought she's got... She actually has a pretty good presence, actually.
She
does.
She looks very different. She's older, obviously, but she looks like a totally different actress.
Yeah, she really... Yeah, I mean, you know. She's not blonde.
That's what Stamos will do to you. That's what life with Stamos will just...
Hey, man. No, she's been married to Jerry O'Connell for like 5 or 6 years now.
Yeah, she was married to Stamos, though, wasn't she?
She was, yes. Yeah. But yeah, no, I thought she was good. I've always liked her. I don't know if I would call her the best actress in the world, but I think she's pretty good.
Yeah.
And I thought that she and Pike had a nice rapport. Like, they had some chemistry, it seemed.
Yeah, I still don't like the mess hall. It feels very cafeteria high school level.
It does, yes.
It really strikes me as sort of weird. I guess that maybe that fits in the terms of the tone and what TOS looks like and everything, but it's very odd.
I am also still weirded out by how oddly analog some of their technology is.
The replicators are the most analog thing, I think.
Well, I'm talking specifically about that thing that she gives him, that like readout, which is it seemed very similar to the last episode where they had that like court document that you needed your thumbprint to activate on Kronos, and it's like it's not a screen, it's like the words are carved in. It's like an old style sci-fi thing where it's like, well, they didn't know how to do digital screens, so they had to, you know, just cut the words out of metal and then project light behind it.
Yes. Yep.
Seems like that. And it's just a weird old style piece of technology where in the show they've got so many other things that they've bumped up, like the tricorders look real modern and futuristic and all that kind of stuff. So it's where they're choosing to pick and choose their battles as far as technology goes, and the show is really confusing me.
We're going to take a break. We're going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back with our final thoughts about an obol for Karan.
Your vital signs have returned to normal. How are you feeling?
I have never felt this way before. Fear has always been the governing principle of my life. But now, it is gone. More than that, I feel power. My own power.
Well, consider yourself certified for duty, Commander.
All right, Clay. So that's it. We made it through the fourth episode. The second season of Discovery is flying by. We only have 10 more episodes to go before the season calls it quits. I think we sort of, I said it before we went to the break, it's sort of a nice little, we just kind of met in the middle, I suppose, on this one. Mm. I don't think this is the worst episode of the season, which still is episode three, which was terrible. This one was really just the weird Frankenstein-y thing to me of it combined the best parts of the first two with the worst parts of the third, and we ended up with this sort of weird middle ground that I really thought was manipulative in terms of the Saru storyline, which I really thought was the worst parts of the whole thing.
Yeah, and it sort of continued... It continued the trend of Burnham fighting back tears, telling other people why they're so great.
Yep.
Which is usually the marker of not a very good episode for the show. Because she does that in the last one to, what's her name? Catherine? What's her mom's name?
Amanda. Spock's mom? Amanda.
Amanda.
Yep.
Amanda, Catherine.
Yeah, listener Tark brought that up, just saying, Burnham is a character who just has endless empty platitudes for other characters.
Yeah, she does, and it's really weird. I don't know why she needs to be this character that's just, you know,
pumping everybody up.
Yeah, it's really strange.
For a Vulcan.
I'm still...
A Vulcan. Yeah. Why does the Vulcan care about everyone else's self-esteem? It doesn't seem logical to me.
Yeah, I'm still not totally sure about her as a character. Like, I don't know
in terms of performance or just the conception of what she is.
Just the conception. I'm not totally sure that they know what they want to do with her in this season.
No.
Because the first season was so clear, more or less. You know, at least the concept was clear.
Yes.
Whether or not the execution was is something.
In terms of her thinking that Vulcan logic is what leads to this bad outcome and her human conflict with that. That's what you mean for the first season, yeah.
And now that the story isn't directly about her, I mean, it kind of is, but in this really, you know, tenuous way that hasn't really paid off yet.
Well, it's got to get back to the faith versus reason thing, which seems like it's custom built for Burnham to handle. And the longer they stay away from that, I think the tougher it's going to get. I don't know if you could, maybe I haven't really thought about it. Maybe you could draw some analogy to there's a faith aspect to this episode, maybe. I don't know if that's really possible. I'm just kind of spitballing, but that feels like the way that Burnham's character should move through the season.
Yeah, the only time I was thinking about that, and it was very tenuous at best, was when they were trying to convince Pike to have faith in Saru and have faith that if they brought the shields down.
Yes, right. Yeah.
But Pike is supposed to be the faith guy.
Right.
But I don't know if it needs
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if it needs to be explicit. Like, you know, it would make sense. I guess that's, you know, I was looking for it in this episode because we've talked about how it seems like Burnham and Tilly always just make the right decision all the time. And though the solution was not Burnham's, as soon as Saru comes up with it, she is, you know, waving the flag for it.
She's the validator of a lot of ideas.
Yeah, actually, you know what? No, because technically it is her solution because Stamets says something about, you know, talking to it. And she's like, oh, thanks, got to go. so, like, I don't know. It would be interesting if they had, especially with the with the Saru and Burnham thing in this episode, if Saru was like, yeah, you know, I think if we do this, it'll work. And Burnham's like, that doesn't make any sense. And like, so then you've got this faith versus reason argument going on with them that's a little bit more consistent to the characters.
And because Saru's whole problem is faith-based, he believes that what he was taught about his disease is the truth of the matter. So that is that conflict between them. And if that's the case, Burnham does not push back on him hard enough through the episode.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm talking about. That scene where they're just, you know, hugging and kissing each other at the beginning there is just her making him feel good while he's dying and saying how great he is and how much she loves him. There's no pushback from her end being like, yeah, why don't you think your way through this instead of just accepting death?
Yeah, where's the proof? Show me the proof that this is what's actually happened, yeah.
And, you know, I think the problem is if you have her push back against the idea of, well, maybe if we just pull the shields down and let it, you know, download all of its, you know, dirty internet secrets onto our computer. If you have her go against that, then she has now made the wrong decision.
Yep.
I don't know. I might be overthinking this.
They might also be concerned that she's coming across as a bitch to a dying guy.
True.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, so what?
I know. So what? That's the character. That's supposed to be. Yeah. The Vulcans are portrayed as kind of bitchy people.
She was kind of a bitch the entire first season.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean, she was...
That was the point. You know,
she was,
that was the point. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're done with this one. An obol for Karan. Interesting episode. We'll see where it goes. I would like to get to Spock sooner rather than later, but we'll talk about that when it happens. If you guys enjoy... Go ahead.
What happens if when they get to Spock, Captain Pike leaves?
In terms... Do you mean just like he's not on the show for some reason and it's just a bad decision?
Yeah, like if they get to Spock and basically... Well, I guess he's probably going to stick around for a while.
Spock is going to stick around. A couple scenes in the trailer where he talks to him, so he's got to at least have one episode with him.
Well, I was just thinking like they wrap up the Spock thing and then they just, you know, they both go back to the Enterprise. But I guess the Spock is involved with the Red Angel. The Red Angel is like the plot of the whole season. So yeah, he's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you guys enjoyed the content, thank you very much for listening. Much appreciated. We got all the social media links, Facebook, Twitter, Discord. That's where you want to go if you want to talk about the show. There's a couple of ways you can support the show financially, which is much appreciated. You can go to the PayPal link, which is down below. You can buy some shirts or cups at our Teespring link. There's a little Teespring store. You can get some of our designs there. Or you can join patreon.com/thepenskyfile if you want to join and become a patron of the show. You get a couple extra podcasts a month. You get the ability to leave some feedback about upcoming DS9 episodes and other generally good stuff. And outside of that... Go ahead.
They really could have saved some money in this episode if instead of having Burnham just pump Saru's tires, she just wore the Saru is Great t-shirt, which is currently available in our t-shirt shop.
That's right. That's right. Yep. To get the Saru is Great. Just it would cut down. It would be a lot of subtext at that point. She wouldn't have to say things. She could just show up with that shirt on and everything would be fine. What was the only other thing? Oh. You don't really need to rate us or anything, but if you want to spread the word of the show, it's much appreciated if you're on Reddit or something like that, and they say, what's a good Star Trek podcast to listen to? If you mention our humble show, it would be much appreciated. A bunch of people have done that recently, and it's much appreciated. It is probably the most organic way to grow the show, because I don't know of any other way to grow these shows, but that's about it. Clay, do you have anything you want to say?
I don't think so. Night Moves number 3... is on sale, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't pay attention to what happens in my career. But if you see a book called Night Moves at the comic book store, I drew it, so buy it.
Something came out on Comixology that popped up on my phone, so I think it must be that. So
yeah, I think issue 3 just came out this week. I think it just came out this week.
Yep. So you can get that wherever your books are sold or Comixology app. And then on Monday, we have Bohemian Rhapsody coming out for Real Ripe and Real Rotten. And then Tuesday we have Rapture, the DS9 episode, so you can look forward to that. I think that's it. Guys, thank you very much for listening. We will be back with the 5th episode, which I don't think has a title yet, so I'm not going to say it now, but we'll be back with the 5th episode of Discovery next week. Until then, see you next time.